The question I have been mulling over is a passage from Numbers 5, 11 to 31. Man, did you find a doozy. Although these verses don't seem to make much sense, they've been rolling up on my feed for a while. She says, should these problematic verses, are they problematic? Is there such a thing as a problematic Bible verse? Problematic verses be ignored, or should we try to find spiritual meaning behind them? Is it has even arisen in the abortion debate? If you had any thoughts, they would be helpful, I'm sure. Now, you can see, I think, once I read through this, why it showed up in the abortion debate, or why someone might label these as problematic. I'm just going to call them different. Difference. It's different edge. It's an Old Testament edge. It's a Jesus is the just and righteous Pantocrator edge. And it's also the imprecatory Psalms edge here a little bit. Like, do you believe that mankind is fallen, and that means evil, and that means worthy of punishment? Like, we're going to cheer when the evil is destroyed. Or do you just think evil's sort of like a thing we say, but it's not really that bad, and it's all going to be kind of good because grandpa took care of it, right? And if you're on that latter one, yeah, you're going to have a lot of trouble with this. If you give yourself over to the mind of the Psalter, I would say, especially, less and less is this going to be problematic. And it's more going to be like, wow, yeah, that's just kind of justice right there. And I mean, isn't justice good? And that's it. We live in a time where we don't think justice is good. That's why it's fallen apart. So here we go. Chapter 5 of Numbers, verse 11. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, if any man's wife goes astray and behaves unfaithfully toward him, that is, commits adultery, and a man lies with her carnally, and it is hidden from the eyes of her husband, and it is concealed that she has defiled herself, and there was no witness against her, nor was she caught. If the spirit of jealousy comes upon him and he becomes jealous of his wife who has defiled herself, or if the spirit of jealousy comes upon him and he becomes jealous of his wife, although she has not defiled herself, then the man shall bring his wife to the priest. Okay, now, before any of this goes further, let's just kind of clarify, what does that mean? That means your wife's pregnant, but you don't think it's yours. Okay?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You're like, but we didn't for 3 months, and now how come? Okay? Or, I was gone on a trip for a week and a half. This seems kind of weird, right? Or I saw her behind the barn, talking to that guy, right? I don't know what it is, but the idea is you suspect adultery, and the reason you suspect adultery is because there's kind of no more monthly custom. Okay? Early trimester, first trimester, mm-hmm. Monthly custom, like, stopped.
She's old.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, but let's just, the reason I say all this is that this is a very narrow context. Okay. This isn't just like, well, the guy felt jealous one afternoon. Okay. Just because the word jealous is there doesn't mean that's what the Hebrew actually says. And it doesn't mean it's all about his kind of puppy love frustration with her not giving him butterfly eyes. All right, that's not what's going on here. What's going on here is he suspects actual adultery because of an actual physical sign, which is an early pregnancy. All right. Now, the word jealous, by the way, here is the same one that gets translated with regard to the Lord is a jealous God. It is about zeal. It is about passion. It is about commitment. Okay. So he would be jealous here because he has seen that evil has been done against him and he wants to do something about it because that would be good. That would be just. Right. In this case, he is to bring her to the priest because, again, he doesn't know. Right. So the short answer of this is that God in Israel was going to do some magic here. Basically, he was going to answer the question for you. Right. And everything else that comes after this is not based upon some sort of like Roman civilization abortion methods or something like that. This is God answering the question that's unknown for you because he's actually God in your midst and can do that. Right. So everything else has to kind of come under that. All right. So he shall bring the offering required for her, 1/10 of an ephah of barley meal. So they bring a bit of barley. He shall pour no oil on it, put no frankincense on it. They do that other times for different types of offering because it is a grain offering of jealousy. That is of discovering zeal. Yes. An offering for remembering, for bringing iniquity to remembrance. So the goal of this offering that has no oil on it is not to be a thank offering or anything like that. It's to do this. I don't want to say magic because it's not magic, but in any other situation, you would call this magic. To instigate this miracle, which is to bring to remembrance a past event that cannot be proven. And we're going to prove it based upon God's promising to enact that when this happens. Okay. The priest shall bring her near and set her before Jesus. So you're, you know, as close to the temple as you can get. The priest shall take holy water in an earthen vessel and shall take some of the dust that is on the floor of the tabernacle and put it into the water. Okay. This is going to be the bitter water, but he's taking holy dirt. The dirt is holy because it's in the tabernacle. The tabernacle holds the Ark of the Covenant. God himself is seated in and on the covenant. So God is the one making this dirt. We're not going out and digging for a certain kind of dirt that we know is poisonous or anything like that. That's where the abortifacient kind of stuff's going to come in. He's taking what is near to God. Yeah. Then the priest shall stand the woman before Jesus, uncover the woman's head, which is a little bit of a shame, and put the offering for the remembering in her hands, which is the grain offering for jealousy. And the priest shall have in his hand the bitter water that brings a curse. That's that water that it just talked about, okay? So this holy water with dust from the tabernacle floor is a bitter water that will bring a curse. That is, it will expose the evil if the evil is there. The priest shall put her under oath. So she's gonna speak before God and say to the woman, if no man has lain with you and if you have not gone astray to uncleanness while under your husband's authority, be free from this bitter water that brings a curse. But if you have gone astray while under your husband's authority and if you have defiled yourself and some man other than your husband has lain with you, then the priest shall put the woman under the oath of the curse and he shall say to the woman, Jesus, the Lord, make you a curse and an oath among your people when the Lord makes your thigh rot and your belly swell. And may this water that causes the curse to go into your stomach and make your belly swell and your thigh rot. That is, may the pregnancy be terminated by this water, by God, when you swear as a lie. So she has to swear as a lie for this to actually do the abortifacient act. If she swears and it's true, it's going to say this in a moment, baby's going to be born. So the man knows it's his son. He knows his jealousy was wrong. He knows his suspecting is wrong. And she's to say, this is her oath, amen, so be it. Right? I am here not to abort my child. I'm here to keep my child. I'm here to tell you that this is a child rightly had. This isn't abortion at all. This is God punishing the wicked if they insist on a double hypocrisy. Rather than confess her sin, which in many scenarios would lead to her dying and the child dying too, rather than confess that though, and even pleading mercy, she's insisting on her righteousness when she's not, and it's going to be exposed as hypocrisy by this act that God has given for just that, to expose the hypocrisy. So the priest shall write these curses in a book, that is, if it actually happens, take note of it. He shall scrape them off. Oh, no, that's not right. He's going to, this is weird. He's going to write down what they wrote, or what they said, and what she said. Then he's going to scrape it off into the water. So somehow the writing then also goes in the drink, right? So the words of your own oath go in the drink that's got the water from the tabernacle. So you take a water, tabernacle dust, and your own words, and you're putting them in this drink. He shall make the woman drink the bitter water that brings a curse, and the water that brings a curse shall enter her to become bitter. Then the priest shall take the grain offering of jealousy from the woman's hand, shall wave the offering before the Lord and bring it to the altar. And the priest shall take a handful of the offering as its memorial portion, burn it on the altar, and afterward make the woman drink the water. When he has made her drink the water, then it shall be, if she has defiled herself and behaved unfaithfully toward her husband, that the water that brings a curse will enter her and become bitter, and her belly will swell, her thigh will rot, and the woman will become a curse among her people. But if the woman has not defiled herself and is clean, then she shall be free and may conceive children. This is the law of jealousy. When a wife, while under her husband's authority, goes astray and defiles herself, or when the spirit of jealousy comes upon a man and he becomes jealous of his wife, then he shall stand the woman before the Lord, and the priest shall execute all this law upon her. Then the man shall be free from iniquity, but the woman shall bear her guilt. Right? So it's actually his duty to do this, to prevent adultery in Israel, which, remember, this was a place where if they just did it all right, it'd all be perfect. And part of the thing is to show how bad we are. But the purpose of this law is to expose hypocrisy and or to justify you. It is to go to God as the actual judge and let God judge. Did I do it? Did I not do it? And so any woman who would be wrongly accused would just have a baby. Mm-hmm. That's all that would happen. And if she is rightly accused, she's going to have a miscarriage. And then she will be, it will be known what she did because of that miscarriage. What if it was a normal miscarriage? No, Jesus is involved. It wouldn't be. It can't be. These are the promises. This is Torah. This is the covenant.
If it was a normal miscarriage, she wouldn't, her husband wouldn't have brought her
if
before.
If it just happened right here at this point, I guess is what I'm saying. Oh, like, okay. No, what if it accidentally, she was wrongly accused? Like, it's just, you're just way off not believing Jesus is risen. Okay. So if you don't think Jesus is risen, you know, you're not going to agree with me. You're going to think this is crazy. And it is a little. I mean, it's magic water, right? Like anybody else that's not a Christian is going to say, that's magic water. Sure. Yep. The author of heaven and earth who designed all things made water into wine, fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, you know, part of the Red Sea, worldwide flood. I mean, you know, he doesn't play by our rules. He plays by his rules. And so here he's giving a way for the priesthood and the actual covenant box, his presence among his people, to act as judge for them in disputes, to declare them innocent for the sake of their innocence, so that they might not be wrongly accused. And so in all of this, just don't miss, this is so that she's not wrongly accused. This is a law to protect her. Okay, this isn't a law to protect him. It's his duty to not just assume and like stone her, right? He has to go and let God be the judge.